Mind Your Farm Business on realagriculture.com is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank.
Welcome to the Mind Your Farm Business podcast brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. I'm Sean Haney, founder of realagriculture.com, and I'll be your host today. You can find more episodes of this podcast by going to mindyourfarmbusiness.com or download it on iTunes. Has someone ever said to you, you have to have a plan? You know, in today's fast-paced world of technology and global competition with shifting political pressures on trade and economics, is having a long-term plan even worth the effort anymore? Is failing faster really the mantra of the day, or is long-term planning still providing to businesses no matter the industry? For many small businesses, finding the time for creating and monitoring a plan can be difficult. Today's guest on the Mind Your Farm Business podcast believes that if done right, a long-term plan for your farm will prove to have the benefits you're looking for to build long-term success. Today we're talking to Larry Martin. He's a principal with the Agri-Food Management Excellence. Larry has over 40 years experience in the agriculture and agri-food sector. He's also owner of Dr. Larry Martin & Associates, a consulting firm. In 2018, Larry Martin was inducted into the Canadian Agricultural Hall of Fame. Here's my conversation on long-term planning with Larry Martin. Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. We actually have sunshine for a change here in Ontario.
Oh, nice, nice. Spring is, it's getting closer. It's getting to feel a little bit more like spring here. Hey, Larry, today we're going to talk about long-term planning and enterprise analysis. And I guess when I hear about long-term planning, my first thing that comes to mind is long-term planning really dead in this fast-paced business world now?
Yeah, I think it has. I mean, I like to work with people, and we do an annual plan. And the first thing you do is you look at the long term. And in many cases, things have changed so much in the past year that the long term plan that you thought you had isn't appropriate anymore. So, yeah, there's just so much change in the external environment that I think a 3 to 5 year plan is about as much as you can expect to have anything, expect to be able to do anything with that's reasonable and useful.
So a lot of times in agriculture, when we evaluate our business, we realize that there's a lot of things out of our control. Does that tend to be a bit of a deterrent from people doing a plan?
I suppose it is, but I don't think I agree with that. I mean, in any planning situation, the first thing you want to do is to say what's happening in the external market, the things that are out of your control. So what changes in policy have we got and so forth, and how has the market changed? but then, you know, that's to inform you about what you want to accomplish in that new environment, but you still have control over all sorts of things in the internal environment that I think you change in order to be able to adapt to whatever the external environment is telling you. For example, one of the things we're seeing right now is we got a lot of younger farmers who came in the 2010 to 2013 period when grain prices were really high and it was kind of easy to make money in those days, and you could go invest a whole lot in machinery and equipment. Well, you know, now if your machinery and equipment annual costs are in the 20% of sales range, that's way too much. It should be down in the 10% range. So what does that mean in terms of adapting? Or I've got a horticulture client, for example, who, you know, the labor costs went way up because of what happened with provincial minimum wages and so forth. Okay, so now we can go in and look and say, my goodness, you're only generating $2 of revenue per dollar of labor sales, but you're generating $24 per dollar of capital investment. So maybe what you should do is replace some of your labor with capital if you possibly can. And those are the kinds of adjustments that you have to have control over in order to respond to the external environment. If you don't, do that planning, I think you're in worse shape because of the external environment.
So you really, one of your first steps here is to do like a SWOT analysis where you look at your strengths, your weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats. You're looking at the internal and external factors.
Well, in fact, I like to turn it around and say, why would you do a SWOT analysis? Why would you start with strengths and weaknesses if you don't know where you want to go? So what's your strengths and weaknesses against what? So I actually call it TOES. So threats, opportunities, strengths, and weaknesses. So what are my threats and opportunities in terms of, you know, what can I accomplish out there? Now, what are my strengths and weaknesses against that new market area? Absolutely. You have, you know, I'm only arguing with you about the order in which you do things, but you have to do those things. You always have to look at your at all four of those things in order to do your planning correctly.
And that plan and that has those objectives, focus is really important here, is it not? Because if all of a sudden, you know, you're scattered and you come up with like, here's our 15 things we want to do this year, really lowering the probability of your opportunity to succeed.
Well, there's an ancient Chinese proverb that I like to cite, which is, if you chase two rabbits, both will escape. So absolutely, focus is really, really important. And, you know, one of the things I've learned over the years when I've been working with this stuff is most major corporations, and I've dealt with a couple of really big multi-billion dollar a year sales corporations, will never have more than four things. Some people will even argue three things that they're going to focus on in their plan for the next year. So, you know, using your example, you get a farmer coming in, and I've got 15 strategic intents. If an international corporation can't focus on more than four, how can you possibly focus on 15? And that's exactly where we want to go, where we try to go with our working, you know, in our C team course. Let's get this down to three or four major strategic intents, which is going to be the area of your focus for the next year. And what I find with that is that once you get to those three or four things, and especially if all of the people in your organization know what they are, then you can start to say, okay, what can we do? We start talking to each other about how do we accomplish the kinds of changes we need to change, or we need to accomplish in those areas. And you really do, you do make major breakthroughs because you do have focus. Focus is really important. Well, absolutely.
And I just think you're hitting on something else right there, Larry, is getting your team involved. Don't go hide in your office and draft everything yourself. Get the people in your business that are living it every day with you. Get them involved in the process.
Well, there's only about 17 good reasons to do that. Number one, if you talk to them, they may know what you want to accomplish. Number two, if you talk to them because they're on the front line doing the stuff that you're not necessarily always doing, they may have a much better idea about how to fix things than you do. And thirdly, at least, I mean, there's at least 17 reasons, but the third one is that once you start having that conversation, you get buy-in from them. I'm working with a company at the moment. This one happens to be a farming corporation, but it's also got processing. And, you know, one of their issues was they were having a terrible time getting the raw material delivered to the plant at the right time and in the right quality. Well, guess how we fixed it? We said, number one, we want to improve this. And we got the guy at the plant who was receiving to work with the person at the farm level who was sending, and it got fixed in about 2 months, just simply because they started talking to each other and they weren't before. So, it's just so logical that you need to get the team involved.
I'll be back with more of my discussion with Dr. Larry Martin, but first, a word from our sponsor. This episode of Mind Your Farm Business Podcast is brought to you by RBC. While there is no way to eliminate all business risks you'll face, creating a sound risk management strategy will help mitigate some of the more common ones and give your business a leg up. The agriculture account managers at RBC can help you set your farm up for success. Visit rbc.com/agriculture to find an ag specialist near you. You're working on your 3 to 5 year plan. What about the qualitative aspects versus the quantitative? Because if we're setting this plan in motion, but all of our targets, all of our objectives are qualitative in nature, is that less impactful than if we actually have some numbers, some tangible numbers to them?
I absolutely believe you have to have numbers. So the stuff that we do on financial benchmarks, for example, we're finding that with grain and oilseed farms, the most profitable ones, at least in the two provinces for which we've got data, the 25% of farms that are most profitable, over the last 3 to 5 years have a gross margin, and this is a very specific definition of gross margin that we have, of 70% or more. The least profitable farms have a gross margin of 55% or less. Okay, so there's a 15% difference. Now, if you got $2 million in sales, that's $300,000 right there off the top. So do I want to aim for 70%? You bet. Do I need to know that there is a number like that? You bet. And what we see, I've got two people from the same province in Saskatchewan right now who are a little bit less than the 70%, and they didn't know about the 70% till they took the course. And as soon as they saw the 70%, well, they're saying, "What is the problem here?" And this particular ratio means that there's only three things that can be causing you to be less than 70%. Number one, you're not selling your product for enough price. Number two, your yields aren't good enough. Or number three, you're paying too much for your inputs. So once we got to the point where they were saying, okay, I'm at, I don't know what the numbers are, let's call it 62%. What do I need to do to get that changed? In one case, they think they put on too much fertilizer and chemicals. They over-applied. They weren't getting the. I heard yesterday that they backed off, and it looks like their numbers are much better for this year. The other case, because they were concerned about drought and so forth, they probably weren't putting on enough fertilizer. So in both cases, they have made an adjustment in the way they're approaching things, and it's because they got that numeric number that they're shooting for. Is it important to be able to get to right at 70%? Of course not, but it is important to have some kind of a goal in mind so you can at least track your changes in performance over time. And there's a whole series of those kinds of numbers that I think are really, really important.
And as you're looking and evaluating, it's not like, hey, last year we planned this and then a year later you look and how did we do against X? In like looking and doing status updates throughout the duration of the period, like if you have a 5-year plan, maybe looking at it every year, is that what you should be doing to check up on how you're doing?
If you're in a field crop operation, in terms of that, the kind of number I just talked about, you can only do it annually because you got to wait till the next crop year and your next marketing year. Let me back up just a second. You're always going to have some things that are measured by something other than a ratio like that. You can only do once a year. A lot of the operations I work with actually have numbers, they have measures that say, okay, I want to start this strategic initiative. My measure is just whether I got it done or not. my first measure is, did I get it done or not? And I find for most operations that I want to meet quarterly, actually, to see whether people are getting done what they said they were going to do. Because if you wait 6 months or 2 or 9 months or even a year, and you didn't do something you were supposed to do in the first 3 months, well, now it's too late. So I really like quarterly meetings. I do this with a number of my clients. I make sure we got an annual plan, but we've actually put it and say, here's what we're going to do in the first quarter. Here's what we're going to do in the second quarter. Here's what we're going to do in the third quarter. And we meet and say, did we do it? If not, why not? What do we need? Was it the right thing to do? What do we need to do to get back on track if it was the right thing to do, and so forth? Because if you wait even a year, it's too late to fix things that went awry, either because you didn't do it or because something changed in the external environment again. So, yeah, I want to have an annual plan. I put it on a quarterly basis, and I try to track what our progress is on a quarterly basis. And then we certainly look at the financial ratios at the end of the year and use those to help figure out what we're going to do next year.
And that was going to kind of lead to my next question is how does all this tie together, Larry? And you know, as the audience is listening to this, you know, I'm hoping we're pushing more operations to have that more of that 3 to 5 year plan for their farming operation. But how do you tie it all together between identifying, you know, threats and the external factors, the looking what you're good at or weak at internally, figuring out some of the financial goals, maybe it's some of the investment goals. You know, we want to expand our feed yard by 20% per se in the next 5 years. How do you bring all that together so it doesn't feel like it's this huge burdensome thing that just sits on the shelf?
Well, that's interesting because, again, here's how we do it. Like, you know, I'll use the example of our company because we're in the process of doing this right now. We go through this external analysis and, you know, you basically ask what's happened, what's changing in your market, what's changing in technology, what's changing in policy and so forth that may affect you. And that brings you down to, you know, what's my value proposition? What market am I going to serve with what set of products and services at what relative price? And that's the definition of value proposition. Then you say, okay, if that's my value proposition, let's look at the internal analysis and that, and you know, whatever you're doing, you've got the internal logistics or the incoming logistics. What, you know, I'm bringing in our case, we're bringing in knowledge and we're bringing in travel and so forth. Can we do that cheaper or more effectively? And what's our production process? What's our marketing and so forth? We go through each of those stages and say, what can we improve against that value proposition that we're trying to deliver on? And out of that, we come up with the three or four, what I call strategic intents, the three or four things that we're going to focus on for the next little while. And then we turn those into operating plan. So what is for strategic intent number one, my strategic intent may be I want to increase that gross margin. Okay, so what am I going to do in the first quarter? Who's responsible for it? And how do we tell whether it was done or not, the measurement issue, and what kind of resources do we need for it? And then what's going to happen in the second quarter, in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter? So you take the big picture and you take it to the detail, but it's quite interesting. You ask the question about, without it being a major tome that you bind on six sides and stick on the shelf someplace, we actually put the strategic plan, value proposition, vision, strategic intents on one page. And then depending on how much activity you're going to have, take each of the strategic intents and say, who's going to do what for the next, you know, each of the next four quarters or six quarters, whatever period of time you want. It's never more than three pages. And it really is a great way to bring it all together. I've never seen one, even the most complicated one, the most complicated one I have right now is that company I just talked about, where you've got both farming and processing and further processing. We got it all together in about six pages. It allows you to focus. It really does.
You mean it doesn't need to be like a 3-inch binder? That's what you're saying, Larry?
It is the worst thing you can do is to have the 3-inch binder.
Absolutely. Hey, Larry, this has been a lot of fun, a great discussion. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
That was a very informative discussion with Dr. Larry Martin. You know, Larry brought up some great takeaways for all of us in this area of long-term planning. Whether it's creating focus with 3 to 4 goals, getting your entire team involved, or routinely checking up on your progress through accountability, all of these are critical components of a long-term business plan for your family farm operation. The 10-year plan may be obsolete, but a farm business needs to have a plan, and that has not changed. Although the duration is more like 3 to 5 years, we will all lift our farm business higher through the practice and execution of the long-term business planning cycle. You can find more episodes of Mind Your Farm Business podcast by going to mindyourfarmbusiness.com or downloading the podcast on iTunes. Thanks to RBC Royal Bank for being our sponsor. And until next time, keep on minding your farm business.